Blog Talk Radio.
Our kitchen cabinet financial expert, Lurie Davis, is back to discuss three important ways that you can finance your child's college education in a painless and methodical way. He'll walk us through the various programs that you can consider regardless of your child's age. And for our listeners who have mounting student debt, Lurie will walk us through a reasonable and painless way to manage your student debt while building your career at the same time. With the rising cost, no more for much more money that we're looking at with many families, even grandparents like me, we all need to listen to this show and share it with others as you plan the educational pathway for your youngsters. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thanks so much for listening to today's show. Well, I've been in diversity work for many, many years, and as I tell so many folks, you never learn enough. You are always continuously learning. I don't care what kind of expert you are or aren't. And we're really seeing that play itself out with the current Ebola situation that is springboarding in different places here in the United States. It certainly is at epidemic levels in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, and other parts of West Africa. And America has tended to sort of turn a blind eye and not really pay that much attention. And now we have the unfortunate death of Mr. Duncan, who passed away about a week plus ago, and those nurses who have been impacted and affected because of what happened with him. I'm going to talk about that at the end of the show and how you can become more aware and less of an isolationist as an American and pay attention to world events, because world events are definitely happening and impacting us. Also want to turn your attention to our upcoming November 6th Multicultural Conference. I'm very excited. It's about 3 weeks away. It's going to be a tremendous event where you can really learn an awful lot about diversity and multicultural issues and how it pertains to you, your job path, your career, your business, or your organization. Great speakers like Garth Dallas, who we're bringing in from Liverpool, England. Again, we're globally connected, so we're going to bring someone from outside of the United States to share his perspective on this important topic. And our closing speaker has now been confirmed, and he is the Chief of Education for the City of Boston, Ron Dorsey, newly appointed position by Mayor Walsh. He's going to give us a lot of insight about the impact and the importance of education and how that takes its play and how it is connected to diversity. We have other speakers from the State Street Organization, the Immigration Learning Center, Blue Cross Blue Shield. It's going to be an amazing experience for only $99. It is affordable for you to bring your staff members and educate them about the importance of these issues related to diversity and multiculturalism. So this is a great time to sort of stay tuned, bring your pads and pencils, learn an awful lot, and do a lot of networking. You can go and register at mssconnect.com, mssconnect.com. Click through. It'll take you to online registration procedures, or you can download the form and get it back to me. So it's going to be a great day on Thursday, November 6th. And we're taking a group to India in February during school vacation week. We have a few slots left. It's going to be a really amazing trip between February 14th and the 21st, leaving from Boston, going through Dubai, on to Chennai, India, an amazing experience where you can really touch the world and find out what it's all about on the other side of the planet. You can go to embracingindia.com for more information about that trip, embracingindia.com. Well, we're going to bring our guest speaker on, who is gracious enough to come back periodically and be on the show talking about very important issues. And for those of you who may have young children and you're struggling and you're trying to figure out how are you going to make ends meet, well, you're also going to have to put on your plate how are you going to educate your students, your young people, your sons or your daughters or your grandchildren. And if you're out of school, we're going to give you some tips about how you can manage that college debt that seems to be mounting each and every day with our expert, financial expert, who's always so chipper and cheery. Every time I talked with him, he's always extraordinarily great. Wonderful to talk with you, Lurie Davis. Hi there.
Hi, Carol. Good afternoon.
Well, let's start off, first of all, we're going to start off with just a perfect scenario with a family that budgets very carefully. They live within their means. They may have one or two children. They're working. They've been employed for a number of years. Things are going well. That's our candidate number one. What suggestions would you give to that particular couple, maybe a two-income couple, who have a couple of kids? They have the normal debt that everyone has. They're able to manage properly, and perhaps they have an extra couple of dollars to put away for their children's education. What should they do?
I would highly recommend, once they have the Social Security number for these children, as early as they get the Social Security number, they should open up a 529 program, 529 college investment account.
And what is that?
The 529 is good for a family because what they get to do is they get to open up the account and designate a beneficiary, which could be the oldest or elder child.
Uh-huh.
It could be 5, 6, 7 year difference between the age of the two children. Uh-huh. That child could be the one initially the money is used for to go to a college, and once that child is graduated, then the account can be changed, the beneficiary can be changed to the next child.
Okay.
And also, this 529 plan is generational, so at that point, you get to keep that account and use it towards your grandchildren at a future date.
Mm-hmm.
So it can stay in the family
plan
and can be generational.
Ah. Now, is this plan just for Massachusetts residents?
Actually, what it is that there are two types of 529 programs that you're going to find. Like, you might have heard of, in Massachusetts, we have the U Fund that has been around for a long period of time. But these are state-specific sponsored plans, mainly the way that they are set up through the 529. So every state is going to have a 529 program that is going to be established, that's going to be funded by a particular institution like a mutual fund company. So mm-hmm. you're going to find a Virginia has a 529 plan. Massachusetts has a 529. So all of the states have a 529 plan. What will happen is that an institution, let's say like a mutual fund company, will designate one of those states' plan to use as its investment vehicle to have as the state-sponsored plan. So let's say for this a company like American Funds, which is one of the big mutual fund companies here. American okay. Funds has Virginia 529 as the main state.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
For their plan.
So
you as an investor could decide to establish the plan in any of these states. What comes into consideration is what are going to be the tax consequences.
So let's say I'm living in Massachusetts and my grandchildren are living in Connecticut. Would my children, my daughter and son-in-law set up an account in Connecticut for their children who obviously live in Connecticut with them?
Well, you're allowed to establish an account also as a grandparent for your grandchildren. They're allowed to establish an account for their children. So the difference is that they can make contributions directly into the 529 program that they establish. You are allowed to set up the 529, make contribution. If you decide you do not want to establish the 529, you could give the money to them in order to make the contribution into the 529 program.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, the 529 program that would be established in Connecticut or whatever state that we're referring to, does that child or children, are they limited in going to a particular school in that state?
And that's where we get to the difference in the different type of 529 program, because there are state-specific 529 programs where if you set up that type of program, that 529 is mainly geared towards institutions within that particular state.
Yes.
So there is the 529 program that also is, you can establish that would allow you to go to any accredited institution, trade school in the United States.
Okay.
So there is a difference between the two types of 529 programs.
So one is state-specific, and the other program allows the child to go to any state or private school in the country?
That's correct.
Oh, okay. I'm learning. I'm learning.
Okay.
Very good. Very good. So now, how does that differ? This, we're talking about the 529 college program. I'm talking with Lurie Davis, a financial and wealth expert, just about paying for college. Now, how does that differ from a Coverdale educational savings account?
There is a big difference between the two. With the Coverdale is mainly an IRA account for college. It only allows $2,000 on an annual basis to be placed into the account for a designated beneficiary on
mm-hmm.
that account. So only $2,000 on an annual basis. And we know the cost of college, putting away $2,000 on an
Ooh.
Annual basis, not going
That's
to get the job. with the 529 program, that allows you to put thousands of dollars into the 529. There are some 529 programs that you could put as much as $350,000.
Wow.
That the value of the account could be at. It mainly depends on the trustees of the 529 program as what's the maximum amount of money that will be allowed to be placed into the 529 for that particular program.
Uh-huh.
Most of them have $350,000 as being the maximum contribution amounts that are allowed. But what has to be considered when you make a contribution into the 529 program is taxes.
Oh,
some of these programs, because we have where you might trigger a gift tax if you make too
yeah.
much of a contribution in a given mm-hmm. year, because the gift tax is $14,000. If
wow.
you contribute over that, you might be subject to taxation for taxes.
Now, when you say $14,000, what is that amount?
The gift tax, you know, on an annual basis, if you wanted to give somebody a gift,
yeah.
a financial gift,
yeah.
$14,000 is the current number. Anything over that could be subject to taxation.
Oh, okay. So it's $14,000 is the cap for taxes.
That's
in other
for
words,
an individual. For an individual, it's $14,000. If you have a spouse and if you're married, it goes to $28,000 that you would be allowed to give as a gift to an individual.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So anything over that trigger the tax.
Right.
Taxes,
so that's a lot to consider. Again, depending on if you don't have a lot of money, then probably the Coverdale Educational, the IRA, would be a stronger consideration. If you have more to give and you know there are going to be these tax implications, then the 529 would be something to consider, if I'm sort of reinterpreting what you're saying, Lurie.
I would say that's probably correct. Clients, when they look at their budget, like you were saying, this is a family, two children, already have a budget, and they look at what they can contribute on an annual basis, that $2,000 Coverdale might be the best way to go about establishing an account to at least have something being put aside for
right.
educational purposes. And also at a future date, if they decide to establish a 529 program, they can transfer the Coverdale into the 529.
The 529. Now, can a grandparent also set up a Coverdale IRA account?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. And this educational account, same question, is it school specific, or will the student have a choice as to where they're going to go to school?
This can be used anywhere. Mainly you're looking at for qualified educational expenses. That
mm-hmm.
term is going to be used a lot when you look at what the money can be used for. You know, you're talking things like tuition, books, room and board, mainly qualified educational expenses. Mm-hmm. If the money is not used, let's say you have a child, you've been saving all of this money, and the child decides they're not going to go to college, they're not going to go to a trade school or any type of educational institution, then at that point, if the money comes out, there's going to be tax consequences.
Got it. But if you're a certain age, let's say you're a grandparent and you set this up and you're in your 70s or 80s, you have a lower tax liability than someone who is still working, let's say.
That could be correct, but you're still going to inquire the 10% penalty is going to be, because if it's not used for qualified educational expenses, and then you're going to also have to pay your regular income taxes.
Got it.
And then on your tax bracket.
All righty. Now, moving right along, we also had down here the Roth IRA. You said that's mainly a retirement program. Principal can be withdrawn any time. Talk to us about that as an option for, probably looking at older people.
Well, actually, what is happening right now is that a lot of people, they're using the Roth also as a vehicle for educational expense contributions to put away for their children's education, because you're allowed to establish a Roth if you have earned income. And the amount that you can contribute to a Roth is $5,500 if you're under the age of 50, and it's $6,500 if you're over the age of 50. You can make an annual contribution into a Roth IRA account. The good thing about a Roth is that it's mainly a retirement account, but the principal can be taken out at any time for any reason whatsoever. But the gain portion that you, if you've gotten any gain, has to stay there in the account until you've either reached age 59 and a half and that 5 years have gone by.
Lots to think about, and that's why if you're thinking along these terms, you need to really look at a financial planning expert like Lurie Davis, who can walk you through these various plans. So let's shift gears very quickly, and we've talked about an ideal family or couple. You know, I look at my daughter and son-in-law in that category because they're married, two incomes with two kids, but we have many other variations. We have people who are alone, single, they're raising their children, they're working. Any differentiation with a single parent who are raising children and want to save for their education?
Well, I think you try to do the best that you possibly can do. I always say any amount of money that you can give towards your children's education is better than none. So the good thing about being in this country, I believe, is that some of the resources that are made available to parents who might fall in this predicament, there's a lot of scholarships that are out there. It's a lot of work to go after those scholarships, but they're out there. The technology is become much better at allowing people to, you know, be at their computer and do a lot of the application process for these scholarships.
Right.
So there is a lot of resources that is available for people to take advantage of. I always try to tell people to stay away as much as possible from private loans. Uh-huh. It's better to go towards the federal loans, do that process first, see what you're able to get from the federal government, and then, as a last resort, turn towards private loans.
Now, when you say private loans, you're talking about bank loans?
Student loans, private student loans.
So
part of the student loan system is that there are federal student loans and there are private student loans. The federal program is much better for the interest rates and also in how they're going to treat you once you graduate and have to start making payments back. They're going to be a little bit more flexible with you and what options are going to be available to you versus the private student loan is not going to be as flexible, and the interest rates are going to be subject to going upward during certain cycles where it could go higher than what you originally had as your interest rate.
Got it. Well, lots of things to think about. I always learn so much when you're on my show. We've talked about various scenarios with families, with children, and the different options that you can consider and the tax implications that also have to be thought of as you select these various plans. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about that career-minded young person, young adult, maybe in his or her 20 or 30, maybe in their 20s or 30s, or possibly 40s, they have debt or mounting debt that they are trying to deal with. They're working. What advice do you have for them as they are trying to weed down and whittle down that college debt that they have amassed because of the degree that they've received?
Well, one of the things I always try to tell clients is that you must start to pay back the student loans. Even if you could work out a small payment, there's some options that you can follow with when you're trying to pay back debt, student loan debt. You have to communicate. One of the keys of dealing with the creditor is to make sure that you are always in communication with them. If you've lost a job, you want to make sure that's the first call that you make. You call them and you find out what your options are. If you could do a deferment, if you could send in a much lower payment, but you must communicate with the creditor. There's a lot of tools that they have that they can work with you when you communicate with them. If you try to avoid them, that's when it's going to get pretty bad for you. I had a situation with a young man that I'm mentoring right now where he thought that he should just wait until he got a job to pick up the phone to call the creditor.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out, that was a big mistake, because the creditor then turned around and defaulted on his loan and sold it off to a debt collection agency.
Ooh, and that obviously is going to impact his credit as he goes to buy cars or homes or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now he's not inside of that student loan system anymore. They've pretty much thrown him to the wolves.
So you're saying best advice, and this really is good advice for anyone, is to stay in communications with the institution of which you have borrowed money and see what kind of plan you can make, and making not only small payments, but probably making small monthly payments every month, and staying in communications is probably your best opportunity to whittle away at that debt, but also not get your loan sold off, as this young man had his loan sold off, and obviously that negatively impacts your credit. Is there anything
else that you
could pass on to our listeners in terms of that kind of good advice?
Well, I think another one is with the federal student loan program. One of the with the Obama administration, they now have forgiveness. So that for individuals who now work for non-for-profit organizations, you could have a substantial amount of your loans forgiven on an annual basis, where you could end up paying zero back to your student loans if you work for a non-for-profit organization.
That's good information, and probably information that a lot of young people don't know, especially here in Boston, because many of them work for nonprofit organizations. So that is very, very much worth undertaking and pursuing. Lurie Davis, you've been very helpful today. Do you have any closing thoughts that you can share with our audience? And if you need his telephone number, it is 781-595-0396. 781-595-0396, and his email address is ldwm@comcast.net. That's for Lurie Davis Wealth Management, ldwm@comcast.net. Closing words from Lurie Davis.
Carol, one of the things I always tell my clients is they have to get started. And when you get that Social Security number, once you've had a newborn, the next step should be to establish one of these accounts. A lot of these accounts you can have as low as $25 being placed into the account on a monthly basis. And you see how quickly the balances will grow on these accounts, but also you will see how quickly the children will grow in that time for college will be at your doorstep.
Right, right. great advice for anyone, no matter what your walk of life happens to be. And you may be an aunt or an uncle where you don't have biological children of your own. I love you, because my aunts and uncles who did not have children, I'm benefiting from their blessings today. So you definitely have a real place in family activities and family planning. So just because you don't have kids, it does not mean you cannot contribute in some kind of way. Lori, you have been great, very insightful. Thank you very much for being a guest on my program today.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Carol.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. All righty. Lori Davis, always an expert. He is licensed here in the state of Massachusetts, operates under Lori Davis Wealth Management. And again, his number is 781-595-0396. He's always very attentive. I would give him a call and find out how you can benefit your family. Well, I want to turn our attention to the latest news that we are all living through, and this is this very precarious, unwinding story that is a developing story. It is far from being over, and that's the whole concept and the predicament that we're in worldwide about Ebola. Ebola is an infectious disease, only infectious based on certain conditions, a lot having to do with bodily fluids and coming in contact with the bodily fluids. We see the poor gentleman in Texas, Dallas, Texas, who passed away, Thomas Duncan, who flew in from Liberia to Dallas to be with his fiance, did not realize he had the disease, got sick, went to the hospital. They turned him away. He went back to the hospital in an ambulance, and they then tested him positive for Ebola, and he died within maybe a week or two. And unfortunately, because of his bodily fluids and the nursing staff that came in contact with him, two of the nurses have now been tested, and they've tested positively. One nurse, who is improving, I understand through CNN, is now being moved to a hospital in Maryland. It could be the National Institute of Health Hospital. I believe that I'm sure it's a federal facility. And then the second nurse, who was recently diagnosed and unfortunately was traveling on an airplane, is now being transferred or has been transferred to Emory University Hospital. I'm an Emory grad, so I know how famous and how important that hospital is. But my point, and I actually worked with some healthcare professionals yesterday. I teach a cultural competency class, and we spent a little bit of time on this yesterday. The big concern that I have in the United States is our lack of awareness or real interest in the rest of the world. Ebola situation is 40 years old, but they diagnosed cases 40 years ago, people who had Ebola in Africa. Fortunately, they were able to contain those cases in those respective countries. Now we have this epidemic that started in Guinea, and then spread to Sierra Leone, and then spread to Liberia nearby, and now it's become a worldwide epidemic, with Nigeria being affected, Senegal as well, parts of the United States and Spain and Europe going just worldwide. We have to be on guard in terms of awareness. 2 months ago, when the CDC head, Dr. Frieden, he testified before Congress and predicted exactly what is happening today. This is not anything new. He said if we don't step up our game and realize that we have to be proactive and preventive at the same time, then it's going to spread. The world is flat. The world is people travel, take airplanes all over the place. That's the world we live in. And with these kind of diseases, having a lack of awareness and having the mindset that, oh, that's happening over there, it doesn't matter, is why we're in the predicament we're in now. So we have to be proactive. We have to educate everyone in the country about the cultural nuances, the issues that are taking place around the connected but also impacted by these decisions. Now healthcare professionals around the United States are scrambling for education because we don't know the extent of this particular illness. We don't know who else has been affected and how these diseases can be treated. That is the big question. So that's why diversity and multiculturalism, from my perspective, matter more than ever. We're going to talk about these and many other issues at the conference coming up on November 6th. Have a great week or weekend. Pass this program on to others, and we will see you next week. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas. Empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. Take care.